Argonautica by Apollonius Rhodius, Part 15. Now soon as ever the maiden saw the light of dawn, with her hands she gathered up her golden tresses, which were floating round her shoulders in careless disarray. And she bathed her tear-stained cheeks, and made her skin shine with ointment sweet as nectar. And she donned a beautiful robe, fitted with well-bent clasps, and above on her head, divinely fair, she threw a veil gleaming like silver. And there, moving to and fro in the palace, she trod the ground, forgetful of the heaven-sent woes thronging round her, and of others that were destined to follow. And she called to her maids. 12 they were, who lay during the night in the vestibule of her fragrant chamber, young as herself, not yet sharing the bridal couch. And she bade them hastily yoke the mules to the chariot to bear her to the beauteous shrine of Hecate. Thereupon the handmaidens were making ready the chariot. And Medea, meanwhile, took from the hollow casket a charm which men say is called the charm of Prometheus. If a man should anoint his body therewithal, having first appeased the maiden, the only begotten, with sacrifice by night. Surely that man could not be wounded by the stroke of bronze, nor would he flinch from blazing fire. But for that day he would prove superior, both in prowess and in might. It shot up firstborn, when the ravening eagle on the rugged flanks of Caucasus let drip to the earth the blood-like ichor of tortured Prometheus. And its flower appeared a cubit above ground, in color like the Corycian crocus, rising on twin stalks. But in the earth, the root was like newly cut flesh. The dark juice of it, like the sap of a mountain oak, she had gathered in a Caspian shell, to make the charm withal, when she had first bathed in 7 ever-flowing streams, and had called 7 times on Brimo, nurse of youth, night-wandering Brimo, of the underworld, queen among the dead, in the gloom of night, clad in dusky garments. And beneath, the dark earth shook and bellowed when the Titanian root was cut. And the son of Iapetus himself groaned, his soul distraught with pain. And she brought the charm forth, and placed it in the fragrant band which encircled her, just beneath her bosom, divinely fair. And going forth, she mounted the swift chariot, and with her went 2 handmaidens on each side. And she herself took the reins, and in her right hand the well-fashioned whip, and drove through the city. And the rest, the handmaids, laid their hands on the chariot behind, and ran along the broad highway, and they kilted up their light robes above their white knees. And even as by the mild waters of Parthenius, or after bathing in the river Amnisus, Leto's daughter stands upon her golden chariot, and courses over the hills with her swift-footed roes, to greet from afar some richly steaming hecatomb. And with her come the nymphs in attendance, gathering, some at the spring of Amnisus itself, others by the glens and many fountained peaks. And round her whine and fawn the beasts, cowering as she moves along. Thus they sped through the city, and on both sides the people gave way, shunning the eyes of the royal maiden. But when she had left the city's well-paved streets, and was approaching the shrine as she drove over the plains, then she alighted eagerly from the smooth-running chariot, and spoke as follows among her maidens. "Friends, verily have I sinned greatly, and took no heed not to go among the stranger folk who roam over our land. The whole city is smitten with dismay. Wherefore no one of the women who formerly gathered here day by day has now come hither. But since we have come, and no one else draws near, come, Let us satisfy our souls without stint with soothing song. And when we have plucked the fair flowers amid the tender grass, that very hour will we return. And with many a gift shall ye reach home this very day, if ye will gladden me with this desire of mine. For Argus pleads with me, also Chalciope herself. But this that ye hear from me, keep silently in your hearts, lest the tale reach my father's ears. As for yon stranger who took on him the task with the oxen, they bid me receive his gifts and rescue him from the deadly contest. And I approved their counsel, and I have summoned him to come to my presence, apart from his comrades, so that we may divide the gifts among ourselves, if he bring them in his hands, and in return may give him a baleful charm. But when he comes, do ye stand aloof. So she spoke, and the crafty counsel pleased them all. And straightway Argus drew Aeson's son apart from his comrades, as soon as he heard from his brothers that Medea had gone at daybreak to the holy shrine of Hecate, and led him over the plain. And with them went Mopsus, son of Ampycus, skilled to utter oracles from the appearance of birds, and skilled to give good counsel to those who set out on a journey. Never yet had there been such a man in the days of old, neither of all the heroes of the lineage of Zeus himself, nor of those who sprung from the blood of the other gods, as on that day the bride of Zeus made Jason both to look upon and to converse with. Even his comrades wondered as they gazed upon him, radiant with manifold graces. And the son of Ampycus rejoiced in their journey, already foreboding how all would end. Now, by the path along the plain, there stands near the shrine a poplar with its crown of countless leaves, whereon often chattering crows would roost. One of them, meantime, as she clapped her wings aloft in the branches, uttered the counsels of Hera.
"What a pitiful seer is this, that has not the wit to conceive even what children know! How that no maiden will say a word of sweetness or love to a youth, when strangers be near! Egone, sorry prophet, witless one! On thee neither Cypris nor the gentle Loves breathe in their kindness!"
She spoke chiding, and Mopsus smiled to hear the god-sent voice of the bird, and thus addressed them.
"Do thou, son of Aeson, pass on to the temple, where thou wilt find the maiden, and very kind will her greeting be to thee through the prompting of Cypris, who will be thy helpmate in the contest, even as Phineus, Agenor's son, foretold. But we two, Argus and I, will await thy return apart in this very spot. Do thou, all alone, be a suppliant, and win her over with prudent words."
He spoke wisely, and both at once gave approval. Nor was Medea's heart turned to other thoughts, for all her singing, and never a song that she essayed pleased her long in her sport. But in confusion she ever faltered, nor did she keep her eyes resting quietly upon the throng of her handmaids, but to the paths far off she strained her gaze, turning her face aside. Oft did her heart sink fainting within her bosom whenever she fancied she heard passing by the sound of a footfall or of the wind. But soon he appeared to her longing eyes, striding along loftily like Sirius coming from ocean, which rises fair and clear to see, but brings unspeakable mischief to flocks. Thus then did Aeson's son come to her, fair to see, but the sight of him brought lovesick care. Her heart fell from out of her bosom, and a dark mist came over her eyes, and a hot blush covered her cheeks. She had no strength to lift her knees backwards or forward, but her feet beneath were rooted to the ground. And meantime, all her handmaidens had drawn aside. So they two stood face to face, without a word, without a sound, like oaks or lofty pines, which stand quietly side by side on the mountains when the wind is still. Then again, when stirred by the breath of the wind, they murmur ceaselessly. So they too were destined to tell out all their tale, stirred by the breath of love. And Aeson's son saw that she had fallen into some heaven-sent calamity, and with soothing words thus addressed her. "Why, pray, maiden, dost thou fear me so much, all alone as I am? Never was I one of those idle boasters such as other men are, not even aforetime when I dwelt in my own country. Wherefore, maiden, be not too much abashed before me, either to inquire whatever thou wilt, or to speak thy mind. But since we have met one another with friendly hearts, in a hallowed spot, where it is wrong to sin, speak openly, and ask questions, and do not beguile me with pleasing words, for at the first thou didst promise thy sister to give me the charms my heart desires. I implore thee, by Hecate herself, by thy parents, and by Zeus who holds his guardian hand over strangers and suppliants, I come here to thee, both a suppliant and a stranger, bending the knee in my sore need. For without thee and thy sister, never shall I prevail in the grievous contest. And to thee will I render thanks hereafter for thy aid, as is right and fitting for men who dwell far oft, making glorious thy name and fame. And the rest of the heroes, returning to Hellas, will spread thy renown, and so will the heroes' wives and mothers, who now perhaps are sitting on the shore and making moan for us. Their painful affliction thou might scatter to the wind. In days past, the maiden Ariadne, daughter of Minos, with kindly intent rescued Theseus from grim contests, the maiden whom Pasiphae, daughter of Helios, bare. But she, when Minos had lulled his wrath to rest, went aboard the ship with him and left her fatherland. And her, even the immortal gods loved, and as a sign in mid-sky, a crown of stars which men call Ariadne's crown, rolls along all night among the heavenly constellations. So to thee too shall be thanks from the gods, if thou wilt save so mighty an array of chieftains. For surely, from thy lovely form, thou art like to excel in gentle courtesy. Thus he spoke, honoring her. And she cast her eyes down with a smile divinely sweet, and her soul melted within her, uplifted by his praise. And she gazed upon him face to face. Nor did she know what word to utter first, but was eager to pour out everything at once. And forth from her fragrant girdle, ungrudgingly, she brought out the charm. And he at once received it in his hands with joy. And she would even have drawn out all her soul from her breast and given it to him, exulting in his desire. So wonderfully did love flash forth a sweet flame from the golden head of Aeson's son. And he captivated her gleaming eyes. And her heart within grew warm, melting away as the dew melts away round roses when warmed by the morning's light. And now both were fixing their eyes upon the ground abashed, and again were throwing glances at each other, smiling with the light of love beneath their radiant brows. And at last and scarcely then did the maiden greet him. Take heed now, that I may devise help for thee. When at thy coming my father has given thee the deadly teeth from the dragon's jaws for sowing, then watch for the time when the night is parted in twain. Then bathe in the stream of the tireless river, and alone, apart from others, clad in dusky raiment, dig a rounded pit, and therein slay a ewe, and sacrifice it whole, heaping high the pyre on the very edge of the pit, and propitiate only begotten Hecate, daughter of Perses, pouring from a goblet the hive-stored labor of bees. And then, when thou hast heedfully sought the grace of the goddess, retreat from the pyre, and let neither the sound of feet drive thee to turn back, nor the baying of hounds, lest haply thou shouldst maim all the rites, and thyself fail to return duly to thy comrades. And at dawn, steep this charm in water, strip, and anoint thy body therewith as with oil. And in it there will be boundless prowess and mighty strength, and thou wilt deem thyself not a match for men, but for the immortal gods. And besides, let thy spear and shield and sword be sprinkled. Thereupon the spearheads of the earth-born men shall not pierce thee, nor the flame of the deadly bulls, as it rushes forth resistless. But such thou shalt not be for long, only for that one day. Still, never flinch from the contest. And I will tell thee, besides, of another help. As soon as thou hast yoked the strong oxen, and, with thy might and thy prowess, hast ploughed all the stubborn fallow. And now, along the furrows, the giants are springing up, when the serpent's teeth are sown on the dusky clods. If thou markest them uprising in throngs from the fallow, cast unseen among them a massy stone, and they over it, like ravening hounds over their food, will slay one another. And do thou thyself hasten to rush to the battle strife, and the fleece thereupon thou shalt bear far away from Ea. Nevertheless, depart wherever thou wilt, or thy pleasure takes thee, when thou hast gone hence. Thus she spake, and cast her eyes to her feet in silence, and her cheek, divinely fair, was wet with warm tears as she sorrowed for that he was about to wander far from her side over the wide sea. And once again she addressed him face to face with mournful words, and took his right hand, for now shame had left her eyes. Remember, if haply thou returnest to thy home, Medea's name, and so will I remember thine, though thou be far away. And of thy kindness, tell me this. Where is thy home? Whither wilt thou sail hence in thy ship over the sea? Wilt thou come near wealthy Orchomenus, or near the Aeaean Isle? And tell me of the maiden, whosoever she be that thou hast named, the far-renowned daughter of Pasiphae, who is kinswoman to my father. Thus she spoke, and over him too, at the tears of the maiden, stole Love, the destroyer. And he thus answered her, All too surely do I deem that never by night and never by day will I forget thee, if I escape death and indeed make my way in safety to the Achaean land, and Aeetes not set before us some other contest worse than this. And if it pleases thee to know about my fatherland, I will tell it out, for indeed my own heart bids me do that. There is a land encircled by lofty mountains, rich in sheep and in pasture, where Prometheus, son of Iapetus, begat goodly Deucalion, who first founded cities and reared temples to the immortal gods, and first ruled over men. This land the neighbors who dwell around call Haemonia, and in it stands Aeolus, my city, and in it many others, where they have not so much as heard the name of the Aeaean Isle. Yet there is a story that Minyas, starting thence, Minyas, son of Aeolus, built long ago the city of Orchomenus that borders on the Cadmeans. But why do I tell thee all this vain talk of our home and of Minos's daughter, far-famed Ariadne, by which glorious name they called that lovely maiden of whom thou askest me? Would that, as Minos then was well inclined to Theseus for her sake, so may thy father be joined to us in friendship. Thus he spoke, soothing her with gentle converse. But pangs most bitter stirred her heart, and in grief did she address him with vehement words. In Hellas, I ween, this is fair to pay heed to covenants. But Aeetes is not such a man among men as thou sayest was Pasiphae's husband Minos. Nor can I liken myself to Ariadne. Wherefore, speak not of guest-love, but only do thou, when thou hast reached Iolcus, remember me, and thee, even in my parents' despite, will I remember. And from far off may a rumor come to me, or some messenger-bird, when thou forgettest me. Or me, even me, may swift blasts catch up and bear over the sea hence to Iolcus, so that I may cast reproaches in thy face, and remind thee that it was by my good will thou didst escape. May I then be seated in thy halls, an unexpected guest. Thus she spoke, with piteous tears falling down her cheeks, and to her Jason replied, Let the empty blasts wander at will, lady, and the messenger bird, for vain is thy talk. But if thou comest to those abodes, and to the land of Hellas, honored and reverenced shalt thou be by women and men, and they shall worship thee even as a goddess, for that by thy counsel their sons came home again. Their brothers and kinsmen and stalwart husbands were saved from calamity. And in our bridal chamber shalt thou prepare our couch, and nothing shall come between our love till the doom of death fold us round. Thus he spoke, and her soul melted within her to hear his words. Nevertheless, she shuddered to think of the deeds of destruction to come. Poor wretch! Not long was she destined to refuse a home in Hellas, for thus Hera devised it, that Aeaean Medea might come to Aeolcus with a bane to Peleus, forsaking her native land. And now her handmaids, glancing at them from a distance, were grieving in silence, and the time of day required that the maiden should return home to her mother's side. But she thought not yet of departing, for her soul delighted both in his beauty and in his winsome words. But Aeson's son took heed, and spoke at last, though late, It is time to depart, lest the sunlight sink before we know it, and some stranger notice all. But again will we come and meet here. So did they two make trial of one another thus far with gentle words, and so thereafter parted. Jason hastened to return in joyous mood to his comrades and the ship, she to her handmaids, and they all together came near to meet her, but she marked them not at all as they thronged around, for her soul had soared aloft amid the clouds, and her feet of their own accord mounted the swift chariot, and with one hand she took the reins, and with the other the whip of cunning workmanship to drive the mules, and they rushed hasting to the city and the palace. And when she was come, Chalciope, in grief for her sons, questioned her. But Medea, distraught by swiftly changing thoughts, neither heard her words, nor was eager to speak in answer to her questions. But she sat upon a low stool at the foot of her couch, bending down, her cheek leaning on her left hand, and her eyes were wet with tears as she pondered what an evil deed she had taken part in by her counsels. End of part 15.